I'll call to order the Senate General Government Consumer and Small Business Protection Committee. Colleagues, today is June 1st, the last day for us to move House bills. And to give people a sense of the direction of the committee, what I will do is go into work session on House Bill 2244A, House Bill 2425A, House Bill 2916A, House Bill 3361A.
That's just 61, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, 3361. And then we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2095. And depending on how things proceed over in the House Judiciary Committee, we will then go into and make some decisions about House Bill 2614. So that being said, I will open a work session on House Bill 2244A. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2244, we heard back on May 9th. It's a measure that modifies the definition of public record for purposes of public records retention and disclosure laws and for purposes of laws relating to archiving public records. We have before us three amendments to this measure, Mr. Chair. The first amendment, the -A6 amendment, does some significant revisions to the measure. That's from the Secretary of State's office. They're here and prepared to speak to that amendment, Mr. Chair. The -7 amendment is from Senator Rosenbaum's office. That measure would replace the original measure and provides language from a different bill, and I believe their staff is here to speak to that amendment. And the -A9 amendment, Mr. Chair, is a combination of the -A6 amendment and the -A7 amendment. Between the two of them, all three would replace the original language in the measure. We have received impact statements for all three sets of amendments. It's a minimal impact on the A6 and A9s, no fiscal impact on the A7s, and no revenue impact on any of the three, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Could we bring up someone from the Secretary of State's office? And do we have anybody that is here to address the A7s?
Yeah, I've got their staff.
Mr. Pack, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. And with me is Mary Beth Herkert, our state archivist, the certified expert on archiving of public records. Thank you for the chance to speak to the -A6 amendments, which, as Patrick mentioned, are amendments. After the hearing the other week, I think there were some very good questions raised about the scope of the bill and whether it really addressed the original intentions of the bill. So we brought together a group of folks, our office, Mr. Gallagher, representing the newspaper publishers, legislative counsel, and our general counsel at the DOJ, and reached the consensus that changes did need to be made to the printed bill to make sure that it accomplished what we intended and only accomplished what we intended. And so what you see before you is a narrowing of the bill. The A6s replace the printed bill, and we focus solely on the definition of a public record in ORS 192.005, which is the definition for the purposes of retention and disposition. So these are the archival statutes that we have direct authority over. These are not the statutes that govern access to public records, what's disclosable or not. That is in 192.401. That falls under the purview of the Attorney General. So the other thing that we wanted to make sure was clear in this bill, and I'll want to make clear from the outset, is 192.005 only impacts local governments and state agencies. It does not impact the state legislature or the judicial department. As separate branches of government, both branches have their own statutory authority to govern what is a public record for their purposes of retention and disposition. Okay. So the changes that we are proposing are not going to impact the work that you do, nor the work that judicial does. Both departments, branches of government, would need to decide whether to revisit their own policies around retention and disposition. This bill only focuses on state agencies and local governments. And what we are proposing in the amendment is to further clarify the purpose, which is to make the definition of a public record for retention and disposition technology neutral, so that the decision about whether you need to retain something as a record is based on the content of the record, not the platform or medium that created it or communicates it. And the bill then requires that the state agencies have a policy that is approved by the state archivist that explains to us how they're going to retain the records that are covered here. The bill is needed now because the advent of social media and other emerging technologies is being used more and more by state agencies, and our concern is that agencies who are conducting the public business through social media or some other web-based collaborative platform aren't keeping the records they need to because they're not required to under the current definition. Again, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, the current definition is paper-based and predates all of the technological advances that have happened. And we want to make sure that, you know, as conversations continue about what's disclosable and at what time period and at what cost, all of those things, those conversations need to continue. But if the record isn't retained in the first place, it can't ever be disclosed to the public. And so we're asking you to alter the definition of record, making it technology neutral. And I wanted to talk just very briefly about, just to give you a specific example as it relates to social media, because I know there were some questions a couple weeks ago about that. And let me give you a hypothetical situation. Tomorrow, the Secretary is traveling to Pendleton to a deployment of the National Guards. She's there on behalf of the governor, sending some troops over to Iraq. So let's say tomorrow we update her Facebook page that says, you know, wishing our troops the best from Pendleton. And then what happens is followers of that Facebook page engage in a robust discussion online about the merits of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, military spending, the deficit, and the federal debt limit. The only piece of all of that that would be a public record as it's defined in this bill is that original posting that says, sending off our troops, good luck. Because that's the piece that was created and used and owned by a state agency. All the rest of that dialogue, which occurs on Facebook, is not created by a state agency, it's not used by, and it's not owned, nor is it retained. So it's just that first original posting that would need to be captured when it's posted that would fit as a public record.
And be retained for how long, Barry?
It will be retained based on the retention schedule that's established by the State Archivist. For the Secretary of State, all of her records are permanent. For other agencies and employees, there's a varying time schedule.
Right.
All right.
Thank you.
Senator Bundy. I just want to ask Mr. Pack, so what steps would be taken then to preserve that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, there'd be a number of ways that could be done, and that's one of the reasons why there's a provision in the bill to have a written policy that we can work with state agencies on. The way we do it if we're posting a blog is we just capture it as a Word document before it gets posted, and then we retain that in our electronic records management system. You could also just print it off and save the paper copy as your permanent record.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The last point that I wanted to make is that this is not a unique situation in Oregon. Every state is facing this, and frankly, we're a little bit in the forefront. Mary Beth has received many requests from other states who have seen this legislation moving forward. If it's adopted and enacted and signed by the governor, they're looking to this language as a model to adapt their own public records laws for archival purposes. And we are not aware of any opposition among state agencies or local governments, and we've worked very closely and have the support of the Newspaper Publishers Association, the Judicial Department, and the Department of Justice. So I'm happy to answer specific questions about the changes in the amendment, but wanted to give you sort of the big picture first.
Senator George.
I know the Senator Boquist had a number of concerns with the bill, and he's not here. Were you able to discuss the amendments with him?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator George, we did. Both the Secretary and I met with him last week, went over the amendments and his specific concerns. I hesitate to speak for a member who's not here, but he told us he would support the -A6s. His specific concern largely was around metadata, which I think a lot of us aren't really sure what exactly that means. There was an exemption in the original bill for metadata, but that was in the access statute.
Okay.
So by taking any changes of that statute out, metadata would be considered a public record that needed to be retained, and that's a piece that we'd work with state agencies on. What does that look like, and how do you retain that?
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Are you here to just answer questions, or do you have testimony also? Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Jaffe, representing the City of Portland. Here to speak to the Dash 7 amendments. The Dash 7s incorporate language from Senate Bill 347, which already passed through the Senate unanimously. What the amendments do, exempt public records of DV victims that are seeking services at a domestic violence service center that is operated by a public agency. We saw the need for this with the development of the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence in Multnomah County. This is a public-private partnership. Multnomah County, the City of Portland administer the center. We've got a bunch of public and private nonprofits and agencies providing a host of services. Right now, because those records are subject to disclosure, when a victim walks into the center, they're not able to maintain records as to the name, who that person's abuser might be, and what services they see one day, and so they might be able to direct the victim to the appropriate services the next time they visit. The language is written very narrowly. It would only apply to a center like the Gateway Center or something else should that be developed elsewhere in the state. The bill also does not impede records with regards to prosecution and has no opposition that we know of. We've gotten the support of the newspaper publishers as well.
Okay. And colleagues, this this was a bill that hit a snag as it moved through the process and died for reasons unrelated to the merits of the bill. So the City of Portland said that this was an important bill to ensure the confidentiality of records relating to domestic violence survivors, and it seemed like a good idea to me, and I did ask the City of Portland to come around and talk to you all about it prior to this. Senator Monroe?
Yeah, I appreciate this. I remember the bill. Gateway Center's in my district, and excellent program there, by the way, so I want to be helpful. The question is, did I hear that the 6 and the 7 amendments are encompassed in the 9 amendments? So if we move 9, we in fact have accomplished both what we want.
Sure.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
Good.
I just want to say how shocked I am that a bill died in this process this year that had nothing to do with the merits of the bill. That just shocks me. I'm really surprised. Yeah, I'm glad we can fix that over here.
Keep me posted. Send me a text. What's going on? Okay.
Seems like everyone else's experience is similar to mine. Dash 9?
Yes, Dash 9, please. Yes, we are.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 9 amendments to House Bill 2244, dated May 31st.
Senator George has moved the Dash A9 amendments to House Bill 2244A. Is there any discussion? Debbie, could you please call the roll?
We can do this without
Senator Bonamici?
Excused.
Senator Boquist?
Excused.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. And not wanting to jeopardize the bill further, I'll let somebody else carry this.
Chair, that was only on the adoption of the amendment.
Oh, that was only, I'm sorry, on the adoption of the amendments. Thank you.
Chair, I move.
I need good help here.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2244 to the floor with as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe hit it on the head. I would be dead without Patrick. Senator George moved House Bill 2244A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. All right, Debbie, please call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Excused.
Senator Boquist?
Excused.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
And Vice Chair George?
Aye.
And Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Senator Monroe, since that is in your district, would you care to carry the bill?
I'd be happy to carry this
one. Senator Monroe will be the carrier on House Bill 2244A as amended. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2244A and open the work session on House Bill 2425A. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2425A modifies provisions relating to local budget law. We heard this bill on May 11th. At that time, we had amendments brought forward, the Dash A2 amendment that one of the witnesses spoke to. However, the consensus of the testimony was that the bill as is a product of a work group and would be jeopardized by adoption of the amendment. Mr. Chair, just to recap, so the bill as is before us has minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, no amendments other than those dashed A2s, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You don't want the A2s, right?
No. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2425A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2425A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Excused.
Senator Boakley?
Excused.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Senator George, would you carry?
Sure.
Senator George will carry House Bill 2425A. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2425A. Open a work session on House Bill 2916A. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2916, we also heard on May 11th, this is the measure that prohibits lenders or their assignees from bringing action or otherwise seeking payment for residual debt following a short sale if the lender reports to the IRS that for a specified reason the lender has canceled all or portion of the borrower's debt under the real estate loan agreement and if the lender provides the borrower with the written evidence of the report. The measure has an emergency clause, would take effect upon passage. There's no fiscal or revenue impact, no amendments. The House vote was 59-0, and that's where we are, Mr. Chair.
All right. No amendments, right?
No amendments, Mr. Chair.
Senator George?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2916A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2916A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Excused.
Senator Boakley?
Excused.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Senator Monroe, you want to carry that one? I'll close the work session on House Bill 2916A and open a work session on House Bill 3361A. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3361, we heard on May 9th. The measure includes clustered mailboxes in the definition of related facilities for the purposes of ensuring access to persons with disabilities. We have since that hearing received the Dash 1 amendment. That amendment was provided by Representative Wisnant's office. He was, as you will recall, the sponsor of the measure. Those amendments were drafted at the request of the Building Codes Division, who is here, was here, and can speak to those amendments, but they essentially what the amendments do is they delay the operative date of the measure in order to conform with federal rulemaking, Mr. Chair. Okay. There's a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact on the measure as amended by the Dash 1 amendments, and they're supported by the sponsor of the measure.
Okay, so we need to move the Dash 1s, correct?
Yes.
Senator George? Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3361, dated May 18th.
Senator George has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3361. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator George?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3361 as amended by the Dash 1 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 3361 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Excused.
Senator Boakley?
Excused.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. And let's see, that's Representative Wisnant's bill. Do you think Senator Telfer might like to carry that? Or
no.
Not really. Why don't I carry that one? Got to do some work and jeopardize some bills.
You lost one bill.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Two, actually. Did you really?
Yeah, the prompt pay and floral. Okay. One came back from was resurrected, yes. Okay, so I will close the work session on House Bill 3361. I will carry the bill, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2095. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have not previously heard this bill, so this will be the first time it's before the committee. The measure enacts the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Compact. It obligates the state of Oregon to use uniform standards that are adopted by the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Commission unless the state opts out of the specific standards. The measure has no amendment, which is typical for interstate compacts. There's no revenue impact and only a minimal fiscal impact on the measure. The measure passed the House on a vote of 48-10, and that's where we are, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Could we please bring up Jeanette Holman, John Mangan, and Justin Delaney? Jeanette, would you like to proceed since you're with the agency?
Okay, thank you. Chair Shields and members of the committee, for the record, I am Jeanette Holman. I'm a senior policy analyst at the Insurance Division for the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I'm pinch hitting for Teresa today. She's next door testifying at the another bill. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2095, which would make Oregon a member of the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Compact. Could have had a shorter name. Currently, the Oregon Department of Consumer and Businesses must approve all forms for all products in Oregon for insurance. This state-based system of approval provides important consumer protections, especially for products that vary depending on the location of the person or the property. For example, automobile insurance, homeowners insurance, health insurance, those all vary a great deal based on where the person is located or the property is located. But for some policies, such as life insurance and annuities, these tend to cross state lines, and when someone moves from state to state, they don't get rid of their policies, they carry them with them. So these lend themselves very well to a uniform national standard, and that's what the Interstate Compact proposes to do or tries to do. In our society today, we're very mobile, and there are some instances where a uniform standard would be more protective for a person simply because it's uniform throughout the country. Recently, we did the life and health guarantee fund changes, and it's easier to handle an insurance company failure under that when the policies are all the same. And in this case, having a similar standard, the same standard with the same policies, helps if in that kind of disastrous situation. But it also means that I don't have to worry about which jurisdiction will handle my claim or my policy if I move from, as I have, from Illinois to Washington to Oregon and back to Washington. If it's the same policy, it's the same kind of standards that would apply and the same interpretation. Historically, if an insurance company wanted to offer a new life policy or an annuity product on a national basis, the company would have to go through a separate regulatory process in 56 jurisdictions. Without the compact, this process could result in the company submitting 30 to 40 versions of the same product to satisfy state-specific requirements and could take more than a year to obtain the product approval. For some of these products, the shelf life is only 24 to 48 months. In fact, they're changing rapidly. So in some cases, it's simply not worth it for the companies to offer those products in states that have state-specific standards. And in, for example, Oregon is a very relatively small market, and we have had some products not offered in Oregon simply because it's too expensive to go through that process for every state, where they can get them approved through the compact for 40 states now at this point. So it just doesn't pencil out financially for the companies in some cases. The Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Compact was created to address those problems by allowing a company to file the same product and to achieve approval for various jurisdictions at one time. The compact process allows the companies to get new products approved and on the market in a timely manner. 37 states and Puerto Rico, although I believe in the last few days since I drafted the testimony, two additional states have added the compact, have joined the compact. So I think it's 39 states and Puerto Rico now. The compact first adopts uniform standards and then reviews and approves insurance products based on those uniform standards. The standards contain strong consumer protections. Once they're approved, the products can be sold in each of the participating states. And currently, the compact covers products in four insurance lines: life insurance, annuities, disability insurance, and long-term care insurance. House Bill 2095 would add Oregon to the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Compact. As a member of the compact, Oregon would participate in the development of the product standards and would also be able to ensure strong consumer protections, not just in Oregon, but in all of the participating states. The membership would streamline our approval process while maintaining the high consumer protection standards we now have. New products would be more quickly available to Oregon consumers, and insurers may offer a greater variety of products in Oregon. If Oregon was not comfortable with a proposed standard, the state is also allowed to opt out of a particular product approval if the state finds additional consumer protection is needed for the product. And usually, just the threat of opting out has been enough. A number of states have been on the website, and a number of states have actually served notice of opting out. And in many of those cases, because it's a compact and the states are trying to work together, generally the end result is that the higher standard is adopted. I'd like to say a little bit about the public involvement process for the compact, because I know that has been raised. Currently, Oregon does not adopt our standards by rule. They're based on statutes, bulletins, other rules, or in some cases, we actually base them on what the compact is doing, even though we're not a member. We haven't gone through a rulemaking process, so these are not adopted with a lot of public input. In the compact process, it is a rulemaking process. They do their rulemaking in accordance with the Model Administrative Procedures Act, and they serve notice to the public. They give notice to legislative committees, just as our rulemaking processes do. So if they were adopting a uniform standard, they would notify this committee and the same House committee that has jurisdiction over insurance matters. They provide notice. They have advisory committees. They have two advisory committees that are actually established in the compact itself, one for industry and one for consumers, and they can adopt other advisory committees. There's a legislative advisory committee that consists of four legislators appointed by NCOIL, or the National Council of Insurance Legislators, I think, and four members appointed by NCSL. So all of those entities have input into the compact standard adoption. Finally, I'll say the compact is fairly narrow in that it's only intended to provide consumer protection through the development of uniform standards for those insurance projects and through the review and approval of products submitted to the commission. Nothing in the compact or any decision or action by the Compact Commission is intended to preempt or alter or modify any claims or remedies that are available to Oregonians now against an insurance company or an agent or any other person or entity that's regulated by the Oregon Insurance Code. Those remedies remain available just as they would now for any other claim. And with that, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'd be more than happy to answer questions.
Who's next?
I'll go next. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Mangan. I'm a Regional Vice President for the American Council of Life Insurers. We're the National Trade Association of Life Insurance Companies. Our members include Standard Insurance Company of Oregon, State Farm, Farmers, and many other companies that you would know. We're in strong support of the Interstate Compact legislation that's before you. And Ms. Holman did a great job of summarizing the compact and how it works. I wanted to mention a couple things. One, the origins of the compact, why it was created in the first place, and also what the benefits of it are now for Oregon and for its consumers and, frankly, for government as well. The compact was developed by regulators in the early 2000s because both regulators and the industry frankly, had flagged speed to market, that is, getting products to market, as a major challenge and as a major problem, frankly, that was creating a lack of competitiveness among companies in our industry versus companies in banking, securities, and other federally regulated entities. The process, the cumbersome process that Ms. Holman has described in 50 states, has also taken a lot of funds and a lot of efficiency out of the system, and close to $1 billion a year was being lost for companies, which of course gets rolled into pricing. So we both saw the need, both industry and regulators, to come up with a better system. Regulators came up with this state-based system of an interstate compact to create this single point of filing and an efficient system, rather than letting the federal government, which was discussed at many points in this process, take over the process in essence and create a federal regulator for insurance companies, where especially national companies that do business in 50 states, where they could go to their regulator and get approval nationwide in maybe 30 to 60 days, as banks do. Instead, our companies were spending 6 months to 3 years getting approval for the same types of products. That situation just was not a good situation. So we have supported state adoption of the compact. As Ms. Holman said, Nevada and Alabama just approved joining the compact, so we're really making a lot of progress toward getting every state into the compact. The benefits of participating are significant, we believe, for Oregon. And I just want to go through the groups that will benefit. We think consumers will benefit from more product options, more affordable coverage, and frankly, a better business environment for their small businesses in many cases. Our consumers are not just individuals and seniors. We cover businesses as small as two people, family firms. We cover public employee unions. We cover private unions. We cover nonprofits and government entities as well, including the state of Oregon. All of those consumers want affordable products. They want good product choices. And they want innovation, and they are driving the innovation in many cases that the companies are trying to come up with and meet that market demand. We also believe that by offering better products, more affordable products, and more choices, our agents and brokers in the field that are in all of your districts that are small businesses in essence will benefit. There will be more economic activity, more sales. That's good for small businesses around the state. Our companies will definitely benefit from being more competitive and more cost-effective in the ability to get products approved, especially on a national basis. Companies, by the way, that do business regionally or in one or two states will always have the option of not using the compact. They can still go and use the current system and go direct to the state regulator. It's completely up to the company to choose. We also believe adoption of the compact will help the state of Oregon, both because you are a policy owner, but also because every policy we sell in this state is subject to a significant tax that's higher than most corporate tax. As you know, our out-of-state companies pay the higher of the Oregon income tax and their home state rate of tax, which is usually a gross premium tax. The more products we sell, the more revenue we generate for the general fund. Another key point I wanted to make that is, I think, very important in this debate is that all of our products are financial protection products that are completely voluntary. These are not mandated that anyone purchase these. Individuals take action of their own accord to protect themselves, their families, their small businesses. Employers take this action voluntarily to cover their employees. And so what we're doing is trying to give them more options. Innovation is critical in that process, and we think the compact will further that effort. Another key point, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Delaney, but in many cases in Oregon, we do not have specific product standards in statute or in rule that describe the requirements for a product, like, for instance, disability income protection. The compact has gone in and diligently gone through those products and created national standards that, frankly, don't even exist in Oregon. So we think that that detail and that rigorous analysis of each of our products is going to benefit everybody who buys that product in the future. Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions or concerns you may have.
One question that I have for you. We think about this as only dealing with, term or other life insurance products, but it also includes disability and long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
With long-term care, I'm not really familiar with how that business operates, but I assume you would have a network similar to what you would have with a physician's network for a health insurance plan. Is that correct? Or do the long-term care homes simply get reimbursed on a percentage of what they bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to answer that as best I can. Long-term care is included in the compact. In many cases, those products are nationally underwritten and drafted. They're consistent across state lines, although you're right, there are variations in cost in terms of skilled nursing care around the country. But the products provide a cash equivalent, in essence. They don't pay for care, per se. They pay cash. They pay money to reimburse you for expenses that you incur if you can't meet certain activities of daily living. So if you trigger the policy, you get money. It's sort of like the disability income protection is the same way. If you can't work, you get income to supplement or replace the income you lost.
Good. Thank you very much for that clarification.
Sure.
Justin.
Thank you. Chair Shields, Vice Chair George, thank you for hearing from us today. I'm here to support House Bill 2095. I won't repeat anything that was said. I'll try to be brief. I wanted to give a little local perspective to this. I'm Vice President.
Could you put your name on the record?
Just go on there. Thank you. I'm the Vice President at Standard Insurance Company, headquartered in Portland. Been there 106 years now. We employ 2,200 Oregonians. This is a bill that, to me, is a common sense piece of legislation supported by the industry, by regulators, by NCSL, by NCOIL, and even some consumer groups. I noticed in the back of the room, AARP has introduced a statement in support. This affects the competitiveness of our company, an Oregon company. The way we file our products, as you heard from Ms. Holman, is state by state, but with an important difference for Standard. We're a national company. We sell in every state and Puerto Rico, but Oregon triggers the approval of policies for us in about a dozen other states. So Oregon's a pretty darn good regulator, and Chair Shields, I've testified before you before in other bills, and I've hopefully confirmed that for you. They do a good job. But it's one insurance division, and it's a small insurance division compared to others. There are delays in product filings. It impacts us in 12, 13 states. We can't get our products to market before our competitors. And you can bet that MetLife and Aetna and others are ready to beat us to those markets. More recently, we moved into equity-indexed annuities. These are annuities that give the consumer some of the upside in the equity markets, but there's a floor below which their investment can't fall. So they get some upside and only a little of the downside. There's a huge demand for these products as markets were going up. We waited for 7 months to get our product approved in 13 states. That's only due to our being headquartered here in Oregon. That's a painful pill for us to swallow, and it hurt us in the market. So delays and variations are the norm across the country, and it's not out of any ill will or poor intent by any regulator. It's just the nature of the beast. You have different regulators set up to do the same thing over and over again. You end up with policies that vary from state to state. And for a company like the Standard that insures individuals and groups that are national in scope and mobile individuals, it just doesn't make any sense anymore. This is a type of inconsistent and duplicative regulation that distracts companies and regulators from what matters. And I say that because if I were to give you advice on how an insurance division can really see what's going on at a company, it's through their audit authority. It's through market conduct exams. It's through financial exams to make sure the company is solvent and will be there to back up policies. This doesn't impact any of that. All of those consumer protections, the stuff that I think matters, will remain with the Oregon Insurance Division. And it's already been addressed, but I wanted to reiterate that the compact is easy for a state to opt out of. The fact that there's only been a few states that have moved towards opting out on a specific product doesn't mean that it's hard to opt out. I think it means exactly what Ms. Holman said. The compact is responsive because they want everybody in. It can be opted out either by regulation or by legislation in this body. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator George, I think you answered this question. What you're saying is that because Oregon isn't in the compact, you don't have any reciprocal relationship with those regulators, which means that you have to go through that each individual.
That's exactly right.
If you had this, then what you're saying is Oregon would approve it, and then the other states would just accept it. I'm sure you're pretty clear about that, but I just want to make
sure. Not quite. A little differently. So as it exists today, Oregon is not in the compact, but because we're headquartered in Oregon, the Oregon Insurance Division is our primary regulator. So there are some states that have, and Ms. Holman could probably add more clarity to this, but there are, in essence, agreements in place that our domestic regulator will trigger product approval in a few other states. It's approximately a dozen. That only applies to Standard because we're headquartered here. So we have to wait for Oregon to approve it before we can sell in another state today, and that's what I was trying to get at. The compact will change it to a single point of filing under one single national set of standards.
Okay, thank you.
Just one second. So, Jeanette, do you know any of the circumstances around why it took 7 months to approve that product?
Well, I don't know the specifics. I can give you some general ideas. We have people in our rates and forms section who are very meticulous. I mean, they read through every form. But I think that part of the problem is that we do not have a good set of adopted standards. I mean, we have standards and they follow them, but it has been a project since I came to the division nearly 3 years ago to try to start moving those standards into a rule format and to go through a rulemaking process. But I'll show you. This is our standards. It's page after page after page of a little sentence with the citation to the statute that they rely on in establishing that standard. And to convert those all to rules is time-consuming. And they go through those standards when they get a product in, particularly if it's not a product that they've ever seen before, and try to match it up with the right standard. And in some cases, they don't always match. And I think that's part of the problem is when it's a new product, it doesn't fit into the round hole that's already there from previous products. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. Add a little insight into that. Again, it was not out of any ill will or poor intent from anybody in the insurance division. It was a newer product, and Oregon is a smaller insurance division, and we're the only game in town when it comes to that type of product. So as we were filing the product, they're trying to develop the standards. This is exactly the type of financial product that lends itself to a national expert body to develop standards so that we don't, because it was difficult for both sides. And they were very transparent with what they were going through, but to develop the standards as a company is trying to sell it is a difficult task for anybody.
Okay. And one last question to Jeanette, and then I'll go on to Senator Bonamici. What is the average turnaround time on approving one of these for Oregon?
For, pardon?
In Oregon, for your department.
I think it's about 30 to 40 days on, but that's all products. That's everything from a little rider to, you know, and it, I think it's the bigger products that we have problems with, the new products.
Okay. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sort of tempted to ask Mr. Mangan to confirm that I wouldn't be able to get a STOLE policy to the I actually have a real question in that. It seems like, I think you said, and I'm sorry I missed the beginning of your testimony, Ms. Holman, that there are 39 states and Puerto Rico already in the compact. It seems like Oregon's pretty late to the game. Are all states treated equally once they're in the compact, and they all have an equal role in giving input into what the standards are and the work that's done in the compact? Or will we be treated like a freshman legislator?
Chair Shields, Senator Bonamici, I'll take a stab at this, and some of these people are more familiar with the compact. Internal operations might want to add to it. But every state has one vote. They have one vote if they're on the management committee, which consists of, it's kind of a formula that puts people on the management committee. But the management committee does the initial review of a product standard or a product. They then make a recommendation to the full commission, and the commission is where Oregon would participate with one vote. Both the commission and the management committee require a two-thirds vote to approve a standard or a product. What else can I tell you about this? We have been participating informally in many of the discussions on the compact now, because we do look to the compact for a lot of as we develop these new product standards for new products that are coming out, we often try to find out what the compact is doing, but we don't have a vote right now. So we're not unfamiliar with the compact or the people that are running the compact now. I don't think we'd be hurt by coming in late because we know the people already.
A follow-up question. The management committee, is that staff or is that representatives from different states who are on the management?
The management committee is representatives from the different states, and there's four members who are from the larger states, four members from the smaller states, and then there's four regional representatives. I'm looking to John because he probably has this memorized. But and the regional members all circulate. Idaho, Washington, and I can't remember who the other state is, have served all Utah, have served as members of that from our region. So they kind of go through a rotation.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonamici, just to add one point to that, we did contact the executive director of the compact that's in Washington, D.C., because we know there's a concern about, you know, will Oregon be treated as well as other states? And her comment was that, number one, this is a member-driven organization, so they want to make sure members join, and they want to make sure members stay in. And so that's why they ensure that these zone representations take place. They believe Oregon would be on that zone representation. They have not had any complaints or any issues where smaller states have been carved out. The two-thirds vote is also protective. And they did note that a lot of the smaller states have provided the most insight into developing some of the toughest standards, including Alaska and Vermont. A couple of them have created new long-term care protections, one of which, in fact, is an annual rate certification for long-term care rates that, frankly, doesn't exist in any state. It's actually stronger in the compact than it is in any particular state. So their view is that this is very protective of small states.
Thank you.
Last question. Do we have any evidence that this has actually resulted in lower premiums for consumers?
I'll let them. I don't know.
Senator Shields, we haven't done that study. We have the study which shows the $1 billion or more being lost each year as of a decade ago. We believe that as a much more efficient system, and as these standards have become more prominent and more companies are using it, that we are going to see significant savings. We don't have a study to prove that yet, but I think the individual support of companies like Standard and others around the country would indicate that they certainly believe that to be the case.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Could we please bring up Amelia Porterfield, please? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Excuse me, I have a little bit of a sore throat today. Senator Shields, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amelia Porterfield with SEIU Local 503, and we represent the frontline workers within DCBS who do these review of insurance products. They're the frontline of protection for insurance consumers, and they review and correct insurance products that are for sale in Oregon according to Oregon laws. They've protected consumers based on the current statute, and then also the other standards that have been set by Oregon over the last very many years. Our frontline workers are very concerned about this bill, and so I'm here to register their concerns. While I think this is a bill that is seemingly aimed at streamlining and government efficiency, we actually feel that it would do so at the expense of consumer protection. Our members are concerned about this important oversight work being transferred to a private organization rather than having a public view of it, what that might do to lack of oversight or disclosure, et cetera. When this was going through the House, I initially heard some folks thinking that our members' concern was about potential job loss if this compact was going to go into effect, and I want to say here for the record that it's actually really a policy concern. I think the agency back in the House mentioned the fact that they might redirect some of the workflow of these employees towards more complex products, but I would say that our workers now catch and correct about 44% of the products that are coming through their desks. So it is even the very basic things that need to be corrected to make sure that they meet the standards set by the state. So they really worry that that oversight would be lost. To speak to the timing, I think that's something else that our folks are actually pretty proud of, is the speed by which they approve these products. I think 60 days is what they've told me for life insurance specific products. So having the compact, I think the timelines are relatively similar. As far as types of things that they catch, and I'm not, I don't want to go through all of the points in my testimony, but I think that there's some things that go that are proposed that our employees see, whether it's exclusions based on terrorism, resistance to armed aggression, a plane flying off its course, natural disaster liability. There are some things that are proposed in some of these products that our members feel that they're on different lines of catching those things, and they're concerned about handing that over to a nationwide entity. Oregon has very stringent standards, and they are very committed to continuing those. And I think the crux of it is that there's a lack of language in this bill and are entering the compact that would require these products to meet the same or higher standards than are set in Oregon. With that language being missing, it's been a part of previous bills on this issue. That's really the crux of their concern, is that floor would be lowered with the compact. And so whether right now if a company has to meet hurdles of a variety of states, if there's only one hurdle to meet, the whole floor is lowered. And so while there's the opt-out provision, we haven't seen other states going for it all the way. And I appreciate the point towards that bringing the product up to higher standards, but we've also anecdotally heard of some pressure to stay opted in, so that could also be a factor in the fact that things aren't actually opted out from by states. So considering the commitment of our members to preserve the consumer protection work that they do and that consumers rely on, that's why we're here to have concerns about this bill.
Yeah. Questions? Amelia, is there a reason why none of your members came to testify?
I believe that they are elsewhere doing their jobs right now. I don't know that I could speak exactly to that point. But.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. Amelia, I wondered if you were here. I think you were here when you heard Ms. Holman talk about, and I believe Mr. Delaney or Mr. Megan talking about, Mr. Delaney said it took 7 months for products to get approved in other states. And I see the compact as a way to help expedite that process. And I know that the average might be shorter, but when there's situations when it takes a long time, would that be a concern, perhaps?
Senator Bonamici, my understanding is that those are the more complex, and it's a rare situation that those products take that long. So I'm sorry, I don't have enough detailed knowledge to speak exactly to how often that happens. But my understanding is it's pretty rare, how a compact, unless it was. I guess the complexity of a product wouldn't be reduced if more states were looking at it. So I don't know if those really complex situations go that much faster through the compact. It's just something I don't know too much about, but
I
think it is a rare.
Mm-hmm. In the written testimony that Ms. Holman provided, she explains that a member state is allowed to opt out of a particular product approval if the state finds additional consumer protection is needed for the product. So I have always been a champion of consumer protection, but I don't think that in this particular instance that would be a problematic, because if they're reviewing and our state regulators they see that there's additional consumer protections that are needed, they don't have to stay in the compact for that particular product. So would that perhaps address some of the concerns of your members if they knew that the consumer protections could be stronger if it was determined by the state?
Thank you, Senator Shields. Senator Bonamici, I asked our members that question yesterday when I was speaking to them about this, and I think while the technicality of the opt-out provision is an important one within the compact, I think their concern is the actuality of that in fact happening, whether it is an easy thing to do. I think that's the concern that they have is that while it's technically on the book as a possibility, whether it's easy for a state to do so or whether there's pressure to stay in the compact would overrule that.
Mr. Chair, I know it's not typical, but would it be possible to have somebody answer that question, somebody who's here who works with the compact, about how whether that happens very often and whether it would be easy to opt out?
Well, I think what I'd like to do is
finish
the rest of the testimony. There is somebody here speaking in opposition as well. And so we have two people from the industry next, then one person speaking in opposition. If we have further questions, I'd be happy to have the agency come back.
Thank you.
To clarify. All right. Thank you, Amelia. And I just wanted to put on the record for your members, it's not unusual for state employees to take some vacation time and come and give their point of view. In fact, we welcome it. And so for your members who might be at the insurance division, just let them know that they're always welcome in this process. We need to hear from them. And if, I know it's if your boss has a point of view and support, it's complicated to do that. But we have a statute that protects people who want to come here and give their point of view. I'm not saying that there's, that there's anything heavy-handed going on at the division, but just let them know that we'd love to have them in the committee if they want to come testify.
Thank you, Senator.
Can we bring up Roger Byron and Lana Butterfield, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing NAFA, the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, and also the Independent Agents and Brokers of Oregon, that's IBO. Both groups are producer groups, and they fully support this bill. I think it's important, first I want to make sure put on the record that our agents completely support this bill, and they like the idea of bringing these products to line quicker. They do not have concerns about the compact and how it will, whether or not it will affect their regulation and how they will do business as agents in Oregon. In fact, people specifically dealing in the life and annuity world, they see this as an important advancement because it puts Oregon agents at a competitive disadvantage if products are nationally recognized in 39 other states. Those products, like Washington producers, can come across state lines and sell them, and Oregon agents can't. If they are newer, better products, that puts our producers at a disadvantage to our neighboring state producers. So that's a key issue. Our agents are independent businessmen in every city in the state, and we need them there in these local communities selling these products and competing so they can help support the tax base of Oregon like everyone else and hopefully get our budget better. You know, there's been some things put on the record as to why this is bad. I think the main thing is that as a compact state, Oregon would be able to participate in the decision-making process to help make sure that products are up to our standards. And Senator Bonamici pointed out, if they're not up to our standards and they get approved anyway, Oregon can opt out. That's the consumer protection we need. Our consumers also, my clients' customers deserve to be able to have the newest and best products available to them in a timely manner. 7 months may be the exception, but when a new product comes out, it will first go to the compact for approval, and once that happens, if that takes an average of 30 or 60 days, it's the individual state approvals won't come until after that. So these 40 state, no, 39 states and Puerto Rico, those consumers now have those products available to them, you know, at least 30 or 60 or 90 or 7 months, days or 7 months earlier than Oregon's consumers were. Will Oregon, being a small state, probably down low on the list of when an out-of-national company would bring a product to development here if they already have it approved in the majority of other states via the compact. So my members support this bill and ask that you move it on to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lana Butterfield, and I'm here representing the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon, Idaho. We also support House Bill 2095 because we think it will give consumers more choice and speedier products. I'd like to call your attention to a survey that was just released by Accenture, they surveyed 2,500 consumers in both Canada and America. And according to this survey, the top criteria for consumers in choosing an insurance provider includes their ability to offer insurance products and services that meet their needs, with 67% saying that this is very important. And so we believe that this bill will help consumers get what they need. We encourage you to pass the bill. Thank you.
All right. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bill Santu.
Thank you, Ron. My name is Bill Sandu. I am a farmer, rates and farms compliance officer for the insurance commissioner. You have my information there. I would like to read that, then I can answer your question, sir. As you can see, I regulated the insurance from 1985 to 2001. I do not see the need for this bill, since Oregon already has excellent laws for life and health insurance products. The Oregon Insurance Commissioner's Office already approves these products for the insurance buying public in Oregon. Why transfer this authority to a private organization? House Bill 2224 was approved two sessions ago by the legislature. This law requires that the life insurance products approved by the Compact meet the same or higher standards of Oregon laws. House Bill 2095 does not require the same standards. This is unacceptable for the insurance buying public. The standard should be same as higher as in House Bill 2224. House Bill 2095 appears to give Oregon legislative authority to the Compact Management Committee, where the state may not be represented most of the time. This bill weakens protection for the Oregon insurance buying public. As I stated above, currently all insurance products must meet or exceed the standards set by Oregon laws. This bill would allow insurance companies to avoid the laws that legislatures have passed to protect the Oregon insurance buying public. House Bill 2095 will only serve the needs of the insurance companies, not the insurance buying public. This bill should not be approved as it is written, yours truly. As far as I'd like to talk a little bit more, sir. As far as I know right now, California, Florida, New York, and Connecticut do not want any part of the compact. Those are the states in the past histories, over the ages and ages, states would look out to how good their products were, so they could adopt those laws. And they don't want any part, as far as I know, right now they don't want any part of the compact, sir. So I hope you have a letter also written by Donna Bleiler, who used to work with me at the Insurance Commissioner's Office, where we regulated health insurance and life insurance. And she's supposed to have written her opinion. I hope you can read that, sir. And attached with my stuff are two things I downloaded from the websites, and you can look, read those at your time, sir. One is the National Conference of Insurance Legislators, and you can see some of the stuff they have written in these things. People are having a lot of problems with the policies being issued by the compacts. So that's why I'm here, sir. I'm here for the insurance buying public. That's what I regulated for 16 and a half years, and I don't think you should let your authority go to a private organization, sir. I'd like you to keep your own authority to pass the laws in Oregon. And Oregon does approve policies. I know Jeanette was mentioning most of the life insurance policies are approved by three people who work there right now. When I was there, they were working. They're very qualified people, and they're trying to approve the policies within 60 days, sir. About 40% of those policies have to be corrected over and over. And so I'm afraid this will be a serious problem for the insurance buying public if you don't have any authority over how the policies should be approved. Especially when I remember, sir, when I was approving back in the 80s, long-term care insurance policy, a lot of companies would not listen to me because we did not have any legislature. And they would keep putting provisions which were not very good for the insurance buying public. Then Mr. Kulongoski was my insurance commissioner. I talked to him. I said, please, we need a law so we can have a good life insurance policy for the insurance buying public. And that's when that law was passed, sir. Now you're saying that law does not need to work anymore because compacts can approve those policies. Therefore, I don't think that will be very good for the insurance buying public in Oregon, sir. I'll be glad to answer any question if you have, Honor.
Mr. Sandhu.
Yes, sir.
In your testimony.
Yes, sir.
There's a resolution sponsored by Representative Robert Dameron. Can you summarize it for me?
Which one, sir?
This. What's he getting at?
Which paragraph is, sir?
I assume that the point of this is to oppose the...
I just attached those, sir, because they are, as you can see, the National Conference of Insurance Legislators are not very happy with this kind of legislature. They are saying there are a lot of problems with those products being approved by the compact, sir.
And was this actually approved?
Yeah.
Long-term care?
No, this resolution, or was it just proposed?
No, it's just a proposal, sir. No, I'm not proposing anything. I just gave you the, for your information, sir.
Right, but do you know if this was adopted or just proposed?
No, it was just proposed, sir.
Okay. All right, thank you. Questions for this witness? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I appreciate your testimony very much.
You're honored. Welcome,
thank
sir.
You. I think we should read the resolution pretty carefully because it seems to deal with particular sales of annuities and marketing practices as much as with a compact. I just looked at the website, and I just wanted to maybe put something on the record because it was in your testimony and also in Amelia's testimony about the nature of the commission interstate insurance compact, and it says right on their website, the compact established a multi-state public entity, the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Commission. So I don't really see it as a private entity, which is totally different from
it. It was regulated, as far as I understand, madam, it was started by the ACLI. John Mangan should be able to tell you that, if that's true. I believe that's true. American Council of Life Insurance is who started Compact, sir. Isn't that true, Mangan? Isn't that true?
We can figure that out.
Yeah, we'll ask the.
So it started by the insurance companies, sir.
And
American Life Insurance Company, the one who started the Compact, madam. So it's for their benefits, not for the public benefits. That's the way I understand it. Because I worked with the insurance company. They were wonderful with me. I would read the policy, madam, and I would call the insurance company. I said, there are some provisions in the policy I don't think are very good for the insurance buying public. And I'm not lying. This is the truth. The guy will say, Mr. Sandhu, you are the first one to complain about this provision. We had 25 states who approved it. But I agree with you, this is not a very good thing in the policy for the insurance buying public. And they would take it out. Because I would study every word in the policy, make sure everything was wonderful, complying with our Oregon laws, and it's good for the insurance buying public. And that is what the current compliance officer do, and we will lose that. That's what I'm worried about, madam. We will lose that effect.
A follow-up. In some ways, it may be viewed as losing it, but it also may be viewed as gaining the eyes of 39 other states as well, because there's more people looking at the policies. So I guess it depends on how you look at it. And
I understand. It's up to you, madam, but I don't think this is a very good situation for the insurance buying public in Oregon. You will notice that after a while. I don't want you to give your authority away. That's what you're doing. If you approve this bill, you're saying, okay, Compact has the authority now to approve the policies to be sold in Oregon. I don't think that's fair, in my viewpoints. That's the way I feel.
Senator Bonamici, were you interrupted?
No, I just wanted to also ask or let people know that according to the website, because you mentioned the other states, in addition to considering legislation here, also New York, Connecticut, Alabama, and Nevada are considering legislation now. So you mentioned New York and Connecticut, and I don't know the status of their...
They do not want any part of the compact, as far as I know right now, madam. Florida, California, Connecticut and New York. They don't want any part of it. And those were the leading states in the past for who other states would look, see how good their policies were, so they could approve similar laws in their states.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, before I let you go, that you did include in your testimony something about the compact voting down public access to product filings. Do we have public access to product filings here in Oregon currently? Do you know?
Public access?
This is what you gave in your...
Oh, the national underwriters are complaining about that too. Yes, sir.
So, well, I can also ask the division, but do you know if we have open public access to product filings in Oregon now?
No. The public does not come to the... But they can come to you folks if they want to change some law, sir. They would have to come to the legislature to make approval. Because I used to work with a lot of public people when I was regulating health insurance. For example, we used to have a law, it did not cover the adopted children. When the adopting family people came from Portland to talk to the deputy commissioner, they sent it to him to me. They said, he's the one who regulates the health insurance, talk to him. They said, we adopt children and the insurance refuses to cover them because they had a pre-existing condition. So I helped work with them. I said, I cannot do that. You have to go to legislature. So I asked them to go to legislature, ask the legislature that the adopted children must be covered same way as the newborn children. The day individual signs for adoption, from that day, child is automatically covered regardless of pre-existing condition. So these are the kind of things I worked with, sir, for 17 years.
Okay.
And we would not be able to do any of those things anymore. That's what I'm worried about.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Mr. Sandhu, I appreciate your testimony.
You're welcome.
Thank you very
sir.
Much for coming.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Could we have the agency come back up and address any of the points that you would like to? I'm particularly interested in whether or not the public has access to filings now and whether or not that has been changed by compact.
Chair Shields, Jeanette Holman from the Insurance Division. The public would have access with the exception of anything that's identified as a trade secret. Otherwise, it would all be a public record.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Well, it's part of our law.
Okay. So, would the policy that's going on at the compact change Oregon law? If
no,
did you see this article that was part of his testimony?
No, there's specific provisions in the compact that say that it does not affect any other law, and it doesn't affect anything like our public records law. That those laws remain the same in the states.
Okay.
They don't have to follow those laws.
Well, wait a second. Let's.
I'm sorry, sir, but yeah. They don't have to follow those laws.
I appreciate that. Let
I'm sorry.
Let the division have their say. You've had yours. Okay. All right. Anything else that you would like to comment on?
Just as far as the question that came up about opting out and how easy it is, and it really is easy. And I checked the website, and there were a number of instances where states had served notice of opting out. The thing is, they have not actually gone through with an opt-out because the other states, at least the ones that have actually been addressed, have addressed those concerns of the other states before it got to the point where they actually opted out. But it is not a difficult process. And I think it's interesting that the people who are now doing our product reviews are the ones that would be participating in the product development at the interstate compact level, and they're the ones, you know, the same provisions that they identify now as a problem, they would identify earlier in the process, and we would then, you know, if we found that they didn't comply with Oregon law, if they didn't protect Oregon consumers, we would serve notice of opting out. And at that point, the weight of being a member of a compact would really show, because at that point we would be able to try and convince the other states not to adopt that standard. And if, and evidently, what's been going on is that is what has been happening. The other states have acceded to the state's concerns and adopted the more protective standards.
Okay. So, Jeanette, if, let's say, I assume it's not the staff that are going to the Interstate Compact meetings, it's the insurance commissioner.
Pardon?
I assume it's not the staff that are going to the Interstate Compact Commission meetings, it's the insurance commissioner.
Under the, you mean if we joined the compact? Yes, but she would go with the recommendation of our staff.
Okay. And if the commissioner decided not to object to something that she felt was outside the spirit of or wording of the law, the compact would take precedent over state law.
Well, the compact standard would be adopted, and we'd be bound by it if we don't object. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Good. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much
thank
for your
you.
Testimony, colleagues. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to adjourn. I mean, not adjourn. Not adjourn. We are going to recess for a few moments because I want to talk over a couple of the issues with some of the committee members before.
Okay.
So if you all could stay close, we will recess and come back in just a few moments. recess. I will continue the meeting of the General Government Consumer and Small Business Protection Committee. Colleagues, today is still January 1st.
I wish it was January.
We're almost done.
June 1st. It's June 1st.
Colleagues, I just to give you an idea of where we're going, I really struggled with this decision. I checked in with all the committee members, and I think I could argue either way for House Bill 2095, and I really appreciate the testimony from people who've been doing this work for a long time. It was definitely the consensus of the committee that we should move forward with this. But I want to put on the record my concerns in from the testimony that we've heard. And if there's one thing that I've learned in this building, that nothing is permanent. And if we find out that consumer protections are not being taken care of in this regard, I do anticipate that this committee will be revisiting this shortly to attempt to change that position. So when we last let off,
public hearing, Mr. Chair.
We are in a public hearing now for House Bill 2095. So why don't we go ahead and close the public hearing for House Bill 2095, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2095.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2095 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2095 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We have no amendments, correct? Okay. Is there some discussion?
Just, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to reiterate your comments. I think this is an important bill, but we do need to watch and make sure that consumer protections are preserved. And I'm happy to support the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion? So, yes, Senator Monroe.
Briefly, Mr. Chair, I will support this measure because of a number of things. First of all, the department still has power ultimately to say yes or no, has the power to withdraw on certain items from the compact. I'm troubled by the fact that in many insurance company decisions, California has a lot more clout than Oregon. They're the big dog, and they may be able to overwhelm us. But if we're part of a compact, that gives us added strength. And if it's done right, and we're not giving up our authority and our protections, then I think it can actually strengthen the department and make for a better situation for ratepayers.
And as I mentioned, I'm struggling with this. Having checked in with all the committee members individually who feel strongly about this, I think what I'm going to do to send a signal that there was some dissension around this, I will be a no vote, but will allow the bill to move forward in a democratic fashion because I don't think it's my place to thwart the will of the committee. So just to give you all a heads up of where I'm going, I anticipate the bill will pass. I probably won't carry the bill then.
You want it to pass.
any further discussion?
The motion?
I did.
Oh, you already made a motion.
Yeah. Debbie, could you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
Excused.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes no. Motion passes. Senator Monroe, would you like to carry it?
I'll carry it.
Okay. Senator Monroe will be the carrier. I guess I can't do a minority report, can I? I'll close the work session on House Bill 2095, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2614. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2614 eliminates the requirement that institutions holding real estate reduce the book value of the real estate under certain provisions of law by a certain amount each year, declares emergency effective on passage, no fiscal, no revenue, 53-6 of the House vote. We have dash ones that specify real estate held in an institution in accordance with OR 708A, 175, 3, or 4 shall at all times value them recorded in the institution's books and records of conformance with generally accepted accounting principles. Sets term of retaining at least 10 years after the title is vested from the date of the exchange. No fiscal or revenue on the dash ones, Mr. Chair.
On the Dash Ones. And could you speak to the Dash Ones? Do we need to have some discussion on that, or did you include that in that?
Oh, yeah, that was my, I summarized the Dash Ones.
Okay. Sure.
This was going really fast, yes, that's yes. all.
Senator George, would you like to move the Dash Ones?
Is everybody, are all the groups in?
Dash Ones are consensus.
Yes.
What's the Dash Two?
Oh, would you like to make a motion on the Dash Two?
No. Sure, I move the Dash One amendment to House Bill 2614, dated 5/11.
I'll tell you later.
Okay. Sure, quick, I got my motion.
Trust me vote, Mr. Chair.
That's right. You can't trust your chair. Who can you trust? Senator George has moved the Dash One amendments to House Bill 2614. This is a consensus amendment between DCBS and the Bankers Association. Is there any discussion?
Sounds good.
Seeing none. So any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2614 as amended by the Dash 1 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2614 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Debbie, please call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
Excused.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Senator Bonamici will be the carrier. And colleagues, we are adjourned.